This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Skeleton, skeleton, skeleton crew. Skeleton, skeleton, skeleton crew. We're not stuff that we're into. From Shakespeare to skeleton news.
Yeah!
You are listening to Skeleton Crew Podcast on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio. Te reo irarangi o ngā tangata o Manawatu. Hi, it's your court-mandated jester in the driver's seat. It's Cam.
Hey, it's your castle chef. It's Justin.
Hey, it's your third thing, Zach. And we are joined by...
Kia ora, everyone. I am Matt.
Mr. Matt Kilsby Halliday, the director of our upcoming show, has joined us in the studio for this episode to talk about the show, gas ourselves up a little bit.
So this is kind of like a special episode, our first special episode of the Skeleton Crew podcast, because we are not talking about some abstract highfalutin art concept. No. Skeleton Crew has their second ever production coming up this year. It's going to be in November at the Globe Theatre, and it's a full 90-minute, full-length ensemble cast production. Mm-hmm. Matt, what's it called?
It is called She Kills Monsters.
But Matt, why is it called that?
Because She Kills Monsters.
Wow.
It does what it says on the box.
Yes. Oh my God. Instructions not included.
Yeah.
give us a synopsis. I mean, like, we all know the synopsis. Give our
what
listeners
is it,
a synopsis.
Matt?
So, without wanting to give too much away, I suppose, it is set in the 90s, which is one of the things I love about it. And it is a young woman comes across a D&D module that's been written by her younger sister that she decides to play, and throws someone who has never played D&D before into the world with her newly formed party.
Fantasy land.
Yeah. Like her strange sister, let's say.
Yeah.
Like and a really weird isekai.
So it blends this D&D world with her real life as a young teacher.
And I got to say, I really like this play. I like it because as a comedian, it's very snappy, but also it's got a lot of heart. It talks about a lot of issues like identity and grief, but it's not like a small by the way thing.
Yeah, it's like it's a show where it's very silly and tongue-in-cheek the whole time, but like the emotional core of it never disappears, which is something that I like quite a lot. I probably should mention, written by Ki Nguyen, who we didn't know until recently, is like he writes for Disney.
Disney?
Yeah. So Cam looked this up the other day. He wrote or co-wrote?
So Ki Nguyen is the lead writer behind two of Disney's latest films, Strange World, which I don't think got a theatrical release. I think it went straight to Netflix. And Raya and the Last Dragon, which was quite a big one. That got a full theatrical release. So this guy writes movies.
Yeah, and we're performing one of his plays.
One of his plays.
As far as we know, for the first time in New Zealand.
Yeah, presumably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we just have to deal with the anxiety of him showing up.
Yeah, from America.
If you guys could choose any director and do a play that's written by them, what would it be?
A play that's written by the director?
A movie director.
By a movie director.
Like you choose,
like
you know.
Like a stage adaptation of...
Yeah.
Oh.
Don't say Tarantino.
I was going to say it as a joke. You know me too well.
Yeah.
I don't like
We'll have to do everything backwards. We've got to have to make sure that people are wearing socks.
Yeah. Matt, if you had to answer this question first, which you do.
No, that's fair.
On the spot.
I do have another answer in mind, but I've got to put my hand up and say a couple of years ago I was desperately trying to hunt down because I'd heard there was a stage adaptation of Reservoir Dogs.
Wow.
But haven't managed to find it. So, I mean, anyway.
To be fair, at this stage, there are stage adaptations of a lot of film franchises. Like, I know there's a Spider-Man Broadway show. How to Train Your Dragon's got, like, a ballet thing.
Every anime series has one.
Yeah. Yep, every anime
series. Do you
series
consider
has one.
X on Ice a stage show? Like One Piece on Ice? Or,
yeah. I mean, I guess we should.
How to Train Your Dragon on Ice. Are they stage shows or are they something else?
That's like a sport.
It's closer to circus, right?
Yeah, I'd call it circus. Yeah.
So is your actual answer Reservoir Dogs? Or?
No. I mean, if there was something out there, I would love to get my hands on something written by Scorsese, for example.
Ooh.
He's, Scorsese. Like, for as long as I can remember, been my favorite director. So, okay.
Taxi Driver, the stage play.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are we going to get a taxi?
There are 15 De Niro's.
The most personal is the most creative. Yeah. That's
Taxi
a quote
Driver,
from
the one-man show.
Yeah. Man, this went off the rails fast. Anyway.
Sorry, just throw another one in the bucket. I remember a couple of years back seeing the entire Star Wars saga by one man, like a one-man show.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not usually a fan of those ones, but he takes the piss out of it. Like,
Without outing them to potentially give them legal ramifications, we do know some people who have created a scripted, unauthorized adaptation of a certain BBC series, which was shown in Palmerston North about 10 years ago.
Yeah, it could be anyone.
Could be anyone. You'll never know.
Oh, my gosh. I am so tempted to give their name out. Like, so tempted to say the name right now.
Hey, if you know, you know. And if you know, snitches get stitches. So, Matt, what... let's go back to She Kills Monsters,
because
that's the show that we're actually doing.
Right.
We weren't originally going to do this show, were we? We had a different one in mind.
No, yeah. I mean, I came to you guys, was it late last year, maybe early this year?
Yeah.
With a New Zealand written play in mind, which I really liked. It had its problems, and the cast was significantly smaller. It was only, what, six in the cast?
Yeah.
But we only found that out once we dug into it, you know.
Yeah.
And just off first glance, because you came to us and said, I really like this play, I really want to put it on. What was it that this play was Le Sud, by the way, by
Dave Armstrong.
Dave Armstrong, thank you. So, like, what things drew you to that originally? Because
I liked the what-if concept of it. Mm. So, for those who don't know, Le Sud is basically about what if the South Island had been established, well, not established, what's the word I'm looking for? Colonized by France.
You're allowed to say that word in here.
Yeah.
Good old days.
And so the North Island and the South Island exist as two entirely separate countries, one with the history of what we have. And, yeah, the South Island is, what if it was France that got there?
France.
And just it kind of it comes down to a bit of a political meeting when they're trying to negotiate. Was it electricity prices or something between the two nations?
A power station.
Yeah.
I liked that what if concept of it because it was written in such a way that it's like, oh, this kind of makes sense. Like, this could totally be plausible. And a bit of silly humor thrown in there.
Yeah. I just remember loving the fact, because it's a trilingual play as well. There's entire bits that were, like, written in French.
Yeah.
But there's also because, you know, it also sort of drew on the Maori history of New Zealand as well. There's a character who's, like, calls people Monbro.
Monbro.
Yeah, Monbro
is good. On a cellular level.
It revived me on a cellular level.
I didn't know you were dead.
Well,
it's the same
energy
as like, Konnichiwa, what's up?
But no, we ended up not going with that one, because Skeleton Crew kind of has this thing where we're just like, we're very sort of, I don't know, what would you say our niche is? We're
gremlin-y.
Gremlin-y. Yeah. I like to, I was explaining this to someone today. Yeah. I was like, I really like the idea of Skeleton Crew being that, like, experimentalist theatre company, where everyone else was doing it by the rules. Like, it'd be really cool to build a little niche where we're like, we're the crazy guys.
We still need to film that anime opening with the four of us.
Exactly. Yeah, we need to do that. We're the weirdos.
We're the weirdos. You know? Like, let's make theatre weird again.
Mm. make it weird again. And yeah. so we were playing with Matt's pitch of Lizards, and we're like, a couple of us liked it, a couple of us didn't like it as much. And then one of our other production crew members who couldn't be here tonight, Mikkel, he pitched to us. He's like, hey, so there's this play called She Kills Monsters, which is very, very heavily influenced by Dungeons and Dragons, which I think would be awesome for Skeleton Crew to produce because it's quirky, it's off the wall, predominantly young cast, aimed at not a younger audience, but definitely not, you know, your older.
It's our audience.
Yeah, it's aimed at our audience, you know, like the younger, nerdy, off the wall, millennial kind of stuff.
I'm still young.
Yeah. Matt will tell you, we were in drama class today, and I got the kids to use their bodies to pretend to be getting older and older. And like, just you watch, we're going to get really sad because I'm going to say 20 and they're going to start like pretending to have Zimmer frames or something.
Oh my God.
And they did. They did, but...
there was one in particular that was quite offensive.
Yeah.
Oh, so, come on, we're not that bad.
Yeah, kids have no perspective of what age means. You could say...
Were you dead?
Yeah, was that stupid?
Well, yeah. when Zach actually said, okay, and now you're all 90, seriously, without even looking at each other, half of them just lay on the ground with their arms across their chest. It's like, wow, okay.
Mm. To be fair, I'll probably only make it to like 85. Yeah, at a stretch.
The way you go.
Yeah.
I'm 27 now. I plan, it's my midlife crisis. I'm going to die at 54.
You're just going to do a backflip one day, like in front of your brother's backyard or something, and land face first.
I'm going to land,
and that'll be the end.
I'm going to land on my other shoulder, and it's going to be like Doctor Who with his two hearts, and that's going to be one that kills me. I've killed the first one already.
Doctor Who has two hearts?
Yeah, Time Lords have two hearts.
Why does he have two hearts?
That's a different episode, Justin.
Oh.
Don't hold us
to this. Metaphor.
It's a metaphor. Don't tell Cam.
No meaning. So anyway, we switched to She Kills Monsters, which, as explained, is a sort of a D&D-esque romp where a character discovers a homebrew module created by their estranged younger sister and takes it upon herself to play the game in order to understand her sister better because, and got to probably put it into a little bit of context, her sister's dead. All of her family die in a car crash, and that is what kicks her off.
It is on the first page of the play, so it's not too much of a spoiler.
I got to admit, I sort of skimmed through the first page, so I got to the last page, and I was like, what?
Shocked.
Like,
she was dead the whole time?
I was like, wait, they did say that, didn't they?
They did say that the whole time. Cam's making eyes at me across the desk going, they were dead the whole time because he knows I hate it. But they promised you that was the truth from the beginning of this play.
Least favorite trope, see a different episode.
He's been making eyes at you all the time anyways.
Well, we live together, so I'll let you put two and two together.
Yeah. As stated, yeah, it's every character kind of has their counterpart, don't they, Matt?
They do.
Like, there's real life characters, and then they also are characters within the game.
Yeah, and whether they are actually, I was about to say whether they're a villain or part of the hero's party is reflecting on how they were perceived by the younger sister in her real life. But that is pretty much it. I was double guessing myself on one of the characters, but
And her older sister, the one that's alive, learns a lot of things because, you know, this D&D story was written by a teenager, so the metaphors aren't that complex, right?
No, they're not.
And the names for places are amazing. Like,
yeah,
is it the
Newlandia,
like Steep Mountain or something like that? Mount Steep.
Yeah, like the Cave of Danger and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's very reminiscent of that 70s to 80s swords and sorcery. Eh? Like,
yeah,
like. Oh, I mean, sorry to throw this one at you, but Mount Doom.
It's in the name.
A mountain of doom.
Yeah.
In the Black Speech, a monomath.
Yeah. The cave of, electricity or whatever.
The cave of electricity.
They weren't trying to hide anything.
One of my favorite things is that it's not a spoiler. Two of the characters, their names are Tina and Gabby, and in the D&D world, their names are just Evil Tina and Evil Gabby.
But they're already
not even sugarcoating these ones. It's like, it's those two.
It's those two.
Yeah, I wonder who
suck.
They are.
They're the worst.
Guess which ones were awful in real life as well.
One thing I really appreciate about the story is that, I don't know if you guys are the same, When I was young, I always thought that my imagination was sort of the most private part of myself,
mm-hmm.
yeah. right? It's the most revealing. It's the thing.
Yeah.
If you read a story from me or you see something that I imagined, you're getting a sneak peek into my internal world.
Sure.
Right. And that really sits with me. So the fact that the older sister learns about the younger sister through a D&D campaign that the younger sister wrote, to me, is very meaningful.
Mm. Mm. But then additionally to that, and this is a part I really like about the script, without giving too much away, it touches on how we as people make fantasies to deal with things we're experiencing. Yeah. And there's one part in it where it becomes apparent that the fantasy in the game doesn't reflect real life. And it's, I think that's highly reflective of how we also do this. Because I know I did, like as a young person, I made up all sorts of fantasies to help me cope with things that were happening around mm-hmm. me or like dealing with emotions that I didn't want to deal with.
I've got so much fan fiction about you.
Okay.
Well, it's like kind of one of the key themes of the play, eh, Matt? Like yeah. escapism. Mm. And like
manipulating those details that you know you can't change mm-hmm. in real life, but it's like
a sense of control.
Like, what's your ideal version of this?
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what are some of the highlights that we're looking forward to in this show?
I'm really loving some of the concepts that are coming up so far of how we're going to bring all the monsters and creatures to life on stage. Mm-hmm. Mikkel, who's also helping out big time with our design work, he's come up with some awesome concepts, which he's very confident are practical and can be done. He's got his plans. Yeah. So I'm really excited about that. I love there's so many moments. Like I've read the script countless times now, and every single time without fail, if I'm reading it by myself in my lounge, I will literally be laughing out loud or I will be crying. Like streaming down the cheeks kind of tears at some of the moments in this script. It's just such a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you, man. Like there's some of my favorite bits of the comedy is funny. And it kind of sucks because it'll be lost in an audience when we put it on. But there are jokes in the stage directions.
Yes, there
which
are.
Which is really funny. Like there's a bit where it's just like so-and-so looks at him. He explodes.
And it's, I mean, as I said right at the start as well, I'm really excited about the 90s nostalgia stuff because, I mean, okay, I get you guys were, toddlers in the 90s?
I was five.
Okay.
Freshly born in the 90s.
I mean, I was born, mid-80s, so, the 90s was my youthful mm-hmm. years, and I have just so many memories from that time that I really want to bring with me.
We need a opening animation that has clip art and then maybe some lightning on it,
yes.
Like the X-Men 97.
Yeah,
like 90s word art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clippy
from Microsoft Word shows up.
Clippy.
They're just the graphics from the original Doom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really cool because you mentioned some of the design stuff that we've been doing, that Mikkel's been heading up for us as well. And without giving anything away, which is probably going to be the theme of this episode or the tagline of this episode.
Yeah.
How much can I get away with?
How much can we get away with without ruining the show so people still come and see it? Is how much of Mikkel's designs have been they're evocative of both the dungeons and the classic bombastic Dungeons and Dragons, colorful over the topness, but every character is not just that, they also have a little element of a 90s subculture thrown in as well.
Oh yeah.
So there's going to be a character who is is a D&D demon but is also covered in chains and leather and stuff because they're the 90s grunge guy as well, which is
just on his digital vision boards that he sent through, the amount of times you see something from He-Man or Thundercats.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, honestly, watching, I recently watched the Masters of the Universe movie.
Oh, yeah.
The live-action He-Man movie came out. It does so well to translate that 90s vision into a 2026.
It was a cool vibe. We used to have a vibe back then.
Yeah, I did watch the a couple of clips of him just beating the absolute piss out of Skeletor.
Yeah,
and the bit where with the electric guitar riff when he transforms, and I'm just like, look, I know I was born significantly later than He-Man was around for, but I watched it with my dad because my dad made sure that I got the best education possible with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is... Mm. And that's what we're going to try and do in this show.
Yeah.
And there's nice a bunch save. Of magical elements that we have to bring. Like, it's not just... Because, yeah, we've got the creature designs. So, like, goblins, bugbears, dragons, fairies.
Yeah.
But also, we've got to bring together a lot of D&D elements, one of which is, like, magic. You know, there is a moment where someone casts... Is it magic missile or fireball? It's magic missile, isn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah. Someone casts magic missile, someone explodes, and of course we're like, how do we not shy away from this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do we have a giant gelatinous cube?
Oh, ooh. Yeah, the gelatinous, yeah, that's right.
How much?
I'm looking forward to the gelatinous
How much
cube.
Slime can we get on the audience?
Ooh.
Front row is a splash zone.
If we give them ponchos...
Mm. Yeah, it's like a 4D ride experience, right?
Oh, actually, true story. So I did some fight work, some fight direction for I'm actually doing fight direction for this show. Mm. But I did some fight direction for a show a while ago with Amdram in Wanganui called Morningstar by Albert Bells. It's a stage adaptation of Paradise Lost. So it's war in heaven, angels, archangels,
oh
Lucifer's fall, all of that. And they're like, oh, we want to make this brutal and violent. And so there's the bit they're ripping Lucifer's wings off and there's blood packs under the wings and he just gets drenched and it's brutal. But there was this one bit. So the way they had it set up was the stage went down the middle of the audience and it was dinner theatre. So they were sitting at tables. And at one point they have Lucifer fights Uriel and kills him and cuts his throat. And we had a squeezy knife full of fake blood. And all of the audience on one side of the stage were given ponchos at the start of the thing. And said, when you hear this line, if you want, you may want to put the poncho on because you're in the splash zone. And then I knew what was coming. So I was like, oh, yeah, this is cool. And then I saw these people just on the other side of the stage just getting those on there. And then just going, ah, as just neck blood gets covered. They get covered in neck blood.
Brilliant.
That's fun.
This is fun.
If someone stumbles with the poncho, do the actors wait, or is it just like, nope, too bad.
Nah.
You snooze, you lose.
They were warned. Nah. Like, if you're not fast enough, you're getting neck blood.
So we're going to be sliming the audience in this one.
Yeah. So much slime.
We're bringing, like, classic Nickelodeon.
Yeah, Nickelodeon slime.
We charge extra for that? Like, front row?
Yeah. Front row seats, you're in the slime zone.
Yeah.
You get to take some home in a little tub.
Merch! We can sell merch!
We can sell merch!
Actually, speaking of selling merch, we have to give a shout out to... Valkyrie.
Yeah.
Because we are being, do we call it sponsorship?
We're currently discussing a sponsorship with Valkyrie. Yeah. They've been pretty keen to do it. We haven't locked it in properly yet. Mm. That's Sam's job. Sam's not here. We can talk shit about him.
Never forget.
Never forget. we are super keen to partner up with Valkyrie Games on King Street because, you know, they're a card and dice and video and board game and TTRPG shop. They host D&D for the community all the time. What they do is super aligned with what this show is about.
They do a stellar job of it as well.
Yeah. Mm. They're friends of ours. So.
Yeah.
Do they have any slime dice?
Surely.
Yeah.
Surely.
Those might just be jello shots.
With numbers written
with numbers
jello
on
shots. Number jello shots. Those are for the cast party.
What did you roll?
20.
You'll never know. What did
you roll? Yeah. If you roll a number you don't want, you just eat it and roll
you just,
again.
You just hawk it down and.
But no, like this show is going to be great. Do you have anything, Matt, that you're like? So, like, obviously the craziness of the physical effects and stuff, which we're going to go, because we've got quite a few ambitions for this show.
Yeah.
Do you have any other things that you're really looking forward to sort of, like, figuring out? I know something that I want to bring up briefly, but it's your show, so.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I'm just – one of the things I'm really, really hoping for is to get – just those magic moments between the two sisters.
Mm.
You know, they've got some really, 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 like, pulls on the heartstrings kind of moments between them. And we've got to find that connection with the actors. Mm-hmm. That's going to be one of the really key important parts to selling the story for me. Mm-hmm. If we're not making people cry, we haven't done it right.
Yeah.
That's the heart of the story, really. Yeah.
You were messaging me about this quite late the other night and saying, like, so at the time of recording this, we're about to go and do auditions for this show tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. which is insane. But you were telling me, like, for someone to play the younger sister, we need someone who can snap from playfulness to tragedy, like, at the drop of a hat.
100%. So, yeah.
Because it's like we can be as silly as we want, but there are some actual high-intensity emotional moments in this play which need to be handled with a sense of respect and gravity, don't they?
Mm. And, I mean, that was what I found with working with Sam a few years ago when I did Growth. He was so reliable to bring every emotion to the stage, whether it was being silly, scared, tender. He brought everything to that role because that was, again, another roller coaster of a journey for this individual. Mm-hmm. And I think Sam was on stage for the entire show with the exception of when Justin chopped a ball off.
It's still my favorite on-stage gimmick.
Yeah. Via balloon. Just got a balloon on stage and popped it. That was the medical gear.
My favorite moment in Growth was watching Justin have to masterfully act, feeling up Sam's balls.
Right. Acting. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. The thing that I'm really looking forward to with this show, aside from, once again, directing the fight work, is the fact that this is a show, I mean, it's set... The real world aspect is set in high school. There's a lot of characters who are aged as younger. So, like, this will be the first time Skeleton Crew is really reaching out for teenagers going, like, hey, come be in the show. Like, it's a little bit too late to make that, like, a plug now because we're auditioning tomorrow. But the fact that this is something that's just, like, we've wanted to get youth actors out of high school drama and really inviting them into the wider community for a really long time. And so this is an opportunity to do that with a... sometimes silly, sometimes sweet, just really well-written D&D play.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. Boom, boom!
Whoa!
Did you guys hear that?
Crikey. Oh, it sounded round.
That was... What?
Oh, it sounded like sounded lightning. Boba. Did lightning have a... It's the lightning round! Yay! No, good job, good job.
We're
good
never going to do a proper segue for this.
Okay, try again?
No.
All right, okay.
Matt, we've got some quick-fire questions just to finish off our episode with you.
Okay.
So let's kick it off with our first question. What is the worst animal?
Koala.
Oh, yes! My God! Yes, it's the third time. You're correct. That is the correct answer.
I actually learned working...
Why does everyone hate koalas?
Because they suck.
I mean, yeah, obviously this is the chlamydia thing. But so I'm
you're okay with chlamydia.
At one of the local colleges here, as it mentioned, I was working in Zach's drama class. In year 9 science, so I'm a student supporter, but in a year 9 science class, I actually learned this year that koalas have their favorite tree. They have their tree. That's their food.
Okay.
If that runs out of food, that's it. They just sit there and die.
They
do not have the enthusiasm to go and find another tree.
Oh my God, these guys
suck. That was what I learned in year 9 science this year.
Yeah, and don't they can't recognize that the eucalyptus is food unless it's actually on the tree. Like, you give them a plate of eucalyptus and they'll go, I can't see any food.
That's so dumb.
Smooth brains.
God. Yeah.
Wow. How did evolution not take them out already?
I don't know.
We should have dinosaurs back.
I think people are the only reason they're not extinct.
Yeah.
Question number 2.
What's your favorite TV show?
I'm probably going to get a lot of like cringy looks for this one. I love The Rookie.
No, I agree. Yeah. Fantastic show.
It's so well written.
Fantastic show.
And I mean, Nathan Fillion, he can do no wrong.
I've never seen The Rookie. I'm going to have to watch it one of these days.
Man, it's so good. Yeah. They were, two of the women were at Armageddon recently. They actually didn't. Something like they didn't plan for how popular they actually were, and like the hall where they were doing the interviews just filled up instantaneously, and they had to make more seats and whatnot. And they were like, "I didn't know we were this popular."
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Check it out.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
And final lightning round question, Matt. This is our favorite one. How would you like to die?
And
you cannot go peacefully.
In brutal combat with Steve.
Oh! Okay, well, how are you arming yourself?
Let's just keep it simple. Axes and swords.
Okay.
Axes
and swords.
But Steve needs a win.
Right. I don't know why I was assuming you were going to win. Sorry. Of course.
Yeah, Steve is a character and she kills monsters. It will make sense when you come and see it.
It was his best friend. It's just Matt, some guy Matt knows.
Weirdly enough, my best man was called Steve.
So. Hey. So, Steve, if you're out there, this is where you get your win.
Thanks for being on the show, Matt. Everybody, come and see She Kills Monsters when we put it on later this year. This is Skeleton Crew out.
D&D.
Skeleton Crew podcast. Every Wednesday night at 9:30. Find us on npr.nz/show/skeletoncrew and anywhere you can find podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.